This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. Taxes was waiting and wondering and worrying if you were ever going to get any money back. And then waiting, wondering, and worrying some more. Now Taxes is matching with a TurboTax expert who can do your taxes as soon as today. An expert who gives your taxes their undivided attention as they work on your return, while you get real-time updates on their progress so you can focus on your day. An expert who will find you every deduction possible and file every form, every investment, everything with 100% accuracy. All so you can get the most money back guaranteed. No waiting, no wondering, no worries. Now this is Taxes. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live full service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grey Malkin Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order. I'm doing something crazy today. It is early October, and I'm recording a show way far ahead. Normally, we're like up to date with my life, but we're going to be releasing this episode December 2nd, which is beginning the final month of phase one of my show, which is a crazy thing to say after 3 years. But the Silver Age is wrapping up. 2025, we begin with Giant Size X-Men number one, and some new energy and formatting. But I'm so excited to be talking about the introduction of one of my very favorite comic book characters, Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man. I have a lot of thoughts. We're going to be talking all about this guy today, and it's made me excited to get to the inevitable trial of Jamie Madrox. So let me welcome my three guests. I'm so excited to have all three of these Jamie Madrox super fans here. All of you are lovely people and frequent guests on the Grey Malkin Lane show. Let me have you each introduce yourselves. Let us know your name and pronouns, where we might know you from. My opening question today is simply, what is your favorite Jamie Madrox story, or what do you love most about this character? Let's begin with the lovely Jason Lowe. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Chad. My name is Jason Lowe. Pronouns he, him. Currently the comic writer for Werewolf by Night and Dazzler. Why do I like Multiple Man? He's the master of multitasking, and he's not great at everything. He's a jack of all trades, but the master of none. I love that he tries his best at everything. Very inspiring. And yeah, one of my favorite Multiple Man stories is X-Factor Nation X, where he has this verbal debate with Cyclops to see these two ex-leaders butt heads with each other and match up their types of leadership on where they should lead mutant kind during the Utopia era.
I feel like those moments for Jamie Madrox are very rare, when he has like enough self-confidence to have a strong opinion on something that's actually like contributing to the story. I always love those moments for him. I feel like it's a big journey every time. Let me welcome my friend Scott Free back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Chad. Just saw you in beautiful Minneapolis.
Yes, my goodness. I'm still kind of coming down from that euphoria a little bit.
Yeah, Scott, he, him. I'm a cosplayer. I've done a lot of Jamie Madrox. Why do I love Madrox? It's partly because he is sort of an ordinary guy who, aside from the duplicating powers, unlike a lot of X characters, he's very like grounded. Like, this is a regular dude who happens to have special abilities. He compensates for things, for example, by making like pop culture references or whatever. He's not going to give a stirring speech like Storm or Cyclops. He's going to reference like an episode of Maude from like 1973 and sort of freak out in the corner. And I love that about him. I'd say some of my favorite Madrox stories are actually the 90s Peter David X-Factor stories, and I love the opening arc where it's Madrox versus a dupe who's claiming that he's the real Madrox, and it culminates in the two of them fighting in the Smithsonian and one of them getting punched in the face with a Kermit puppet. And to me, that is Jamie Madrox in a nutshell.
That's excellent. I'm going to be sharing a lot of Jamie Madrox thoughts, but an early one related to what you just said, Scott. Jamie Madrox was homeschooled, like hardcore. Like, doesn't know anyone besides his parents and other versions of himself. He literally grew up talking to himself, and now his power is talking to himself. Fascinating read on the character, but he gives real homeschool energy all the time, right? Like, let me also welcome my dear friend Daryl Lawrence back to the show. Daryl, hi.
Hey there, how's it going? I am so excited to be here. Factor. I'm Daryl. I'm from the X Factor Files podcast. I am also sporting a Madrox shirt. I had to run and get it from the dryer because I wore it at the Uncanny Experience recently and it was still in the wash. I think that I really like him because he does grow over time, not in the mature sense, because he's always sort of like a jokester, but he is smart in that he does send out dupes to learn things for him. He will farm out pieces of himself to gain the knowledge so he can just reabsorb it, which I'm really into that energy, and I wish I could do that because I would have sent a dupe to grad school instead of me going there and then just like took on all of the accolades and the degrees and the knowledge later on. I'll see in a couple years and I'll just reabsorb that because that's your job, not mine. My job is to sit around and watch reruns of Maude, frankly. You know he has that DVD box set.
Leslie, I'm Chad Anderson. I use he, him pronouns. I was just at the Uncanny Experience with Daryl Scott and other dear friends. It was such a lovely, wonderful time. I like my joy receptors like overloaded and I had to like put up like a small shield for the rest of the weekend to like not like sit in a corner and cry somewhere, but like for the best reasons. It was like this safe space, so many just lovely, diverse people feeling loved and accepted. And it just was such a powerful thing to represent the show and such a humbling thing to have people be like, oh, I'm a fan of your show or this show helped me. Like those are such lovely moments for any creator to receive. So thank you everybody for the open welcome and just the lovely, lovely experience.
With the three of us already referencing it, this may sound like an episode. It's really just us convincing Jason to go to the Uncanny Experience next year. Like it's a recruitment call that everyone is listening in on.
Seriously, I was jealous. Hopefully next year.
Dazzler writer Jason Lowe is going to be at the Uncanny Experience in 2025. What?
Let's hope.
We're going to make this a very Jamie Madrox episode. I was talking to my husband about this one and I was like, okay, I just did the first appearance of Wolverine and we made a very special Wolverine episode. Like, how do we make Jamie Madrox episode? First, you invite Jamie Madrox super fans, right? Like, this is not his trial, it's his first appearance. And then my husband gave me the suggestion, well, record the same episode, but release it 10 times, which is actually really funny. I won't be doing that. Can you guys think of other versions of characters that have this type of superpower in other mediums that you are fond of? Not people who can create illusions of themselves, not people who can like create like mirror versions of themselves. I think that's more magic based, and not people who can travel through time and like a whole bunch of you across time all appear at the same time to punch the person, right? Specifically characters that can dupe themselves. Do you have any favorites or people that come to mind?
Triad Girl from Legion of Superheroes. I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, no, it for sure does. Others?
You're coming out of the gate with like a super hard question, Chad. This is a Saturday morning. What the fuck?
There's duplicate. If you guys have read Invincible, there's the one prime unit. And as long as the prime unit stays alive, all the dupes stay alive. But you kill the prime and they're all dead. There's also, if you guys watched The Boys season 4, they gave that guy Doppelganger. He was like some incel weirdo worshiping like this Trump lady. And we walk in on him and there's a whole line of dupes eating each other's ass. And they all end up getting pink eye later in the episode. And it's very funny. He dies horribly. I don't know if you guys watched The Boys. There's a lot of ways to tell multiple men stories. But the character that comes to mind first for me is Gumby. Did you guys watch Gumby ever, like old reruns? He's this little floppy clay green guy and he can just like split himself into two and then there's two Gumbies, or, you know, it's got like that paper dolls feel where you cut it out and everybody's holding hands. Impossible Man at Marvel, I feel like, is Marvel's Gumby. He just like pops him and then like 20 of him are there and like he has a child. Like, here you go. It's like very Gumby energy.
I think it lends itself to a unique storytelling device. And you gave a few examples that aren't extensive as Madrox, that I feel that Multiple Man probably takes it to the extreme in terms of what the dupes can do and their agency and just being able to go out and do things, not knowing a lot of the source material you just cited, but from your descriptions.
So let's start with Gumby, and then we're going to make it really complicated for a second. We recently did an episode, The Trial of the Stranger. It fucks with your head a little bit as we talk about the idea of collective consciousnesses in comics, where you join 10 minds in one being or 100 or a billion, and you create one character that has a billion minds within them, right? We used Jamie Madrox as an example in that episode of like what the opposite of that looks like. We take one human consciousness and we split it into two. We see this story in comics all the time. There's that device in recent Spider-Man comics that split like Peter Parker and Spider-Man apart, and they both had like part of his brain. And like one had the heroism, but one had the strength, right? We do that thing where we divide someone up, where Phantom X gets his brain cut in three, is now three beings with three separate personalities, and they all take a different part of the core. Jamie sometimes seems to have stories related to him literally copying himself, which is one type of story, and others where he seems to be dividing pieces of himself apart, which make you either wonder if the whole keeps everything, but the dupe takes part of it, or when the dupe leaves, does it take that piece of Jamie with him, and Jamie is lacking that piece when he goes. So Jamie can split himself into 100, and the more he does this, the more he is divided, but does the main guy remain the same, or is he divided into all these different pieces? We're going to take this to kind of a sci-fi place. How do you think Jamie Madrox's powers work?
I kind of feel that like Jamie Madrox is like a pie chart that's divided 50 times, and they're all equal sizes. And like when a dupe comes out, like you'll have like maybe 10 different slices that, and each of these slices represent different traits of his personality. And that dupe will have more of a, I guess, a heightened sense of those personalities. Like they're more accentuated with that dupe compared to Prime.
But does Prime maintain all of the traits, and the dupes each have part of the traits?
I think so. And I think he's the one that's banked all those skills. And most of that is like laid like dormant and deep in his brain. Because the thing is, like, when you're learning all these skills, like, I don't know, like he knows a lot of things. Like from X-Factor Investigations, he's got all these dupes to learn all these skills, martial arts, medicine, and all that stuff. And then you bring that all together. It's like your brain's got to be massive to learn all these skills. Like he's got to have them compressed somehow.
It's comparable to the character Prodigy, who the more people he's around, the more he absorbs information, and your brain has to adapt in kind of a plastic way to create more room for it. But for Jamie, I think it's really interesting. You guys have all seen the movie Everything, Everywhere, All at Once?
Yes.
Where it's the idea of the versions of me in alternate realities. We explore this with superheroes all the time. We bring an evil beast in to contrast him with our regular beast, right? It's a way to tell an identity story. But with Jamie, you have this idea of, let's say the person I was at 19, who was, by the way, a Mormon missionary, divides into two. And one of me is the Mormon missionary, and the other goes home and comes out and has his first boyfriend. But the missionary is the Prime one. And then I absorb the experiences of this gay, authentic life from the other version. How does that alter me, and what do I do with it? Jamie's the homeschool kid, and he keeps sending these dupes out. And when the dupes go out, they live different lives. Sometimes with an agenda, like I'm going to infiltrate Hydra, and other times I'm going to become a preacher or a doctor or a lawyer or start a family. And then there's always that, like, Jamie living his plain, boring life, who has to reabsorb the skills from these other people that were him, but also weren't him. I am watching Scott's face slowly contort with, we started with I Love Jamie Madrox to, what the hell are you making me think about, Chad?
This is all, like, correct. I mean, it's Peter David, I think it's in X-Factor Investigations, establishes, you know, Jamie does maintain all of these facets of his personality. The Prime does. It's just certain dupes accentuate certain traits. So, for example, you get the X-Factor dupe, who's the one who tries to kill Richter at the beginning of X-Factor Investigations. Madrox Prime is like, what the hell? I'm you. This is the part of you that's just like, wouldn't it be funny if I shoved Richter off the building? And Madrox is like, that's really effed up. And the dupe is like, well, that's you, buddy.
If we take this on a wider X-Men complex that we've like really seen explored, Jean Grey and Madeline Pryor start from one genetic template and become very different people. And when Jean reabsorbs Madeline, it's a loss of identity, right? It's a loss of separate personhood. Spider-Man, Peter Parker and like Ben Reilly, it's the same type of storyline that we see explored. Like, what does it mean to have identity? But with Jamie, it's interesting because sometimes the dupes seem really obedient to him. They're just like kind of copies that he creates, like little AI units that he's controlling. Almost like your purpose is to punch and then die and then I'll reabsorb. But there's other times when his dupes go on to form very independent identities and refuse to go back to the life they had before. Sometimes for villainous purposes, sometimes for weird ones. And sometimes we have a character like John Maddox who has formed an entire life with a family.
I wanted to go back to what Jason was saying in terms of the aspect of the personality. The way I view it is more of an extract if you want to get into baking. Like if you're going to make vanilla extract, you extract some of that essence out of the bean, but the bean remains and it still has part of that too. And in theory, I think you can probably put the extract direct back in whatever it is. Probably complicated. There's chemistry there. I don't know.
Which also makes me think, though, if we have one bean and he's created 10 versions and there's that much extract out there, and then he creates 100, what does that mean for the main unit? Like, is it overextended or does it recharge each time? Again, my brain goes to all these places. Like, what are the capabilities of this power set?
The bean is still growing while you're extracting it. That's my answer to that. I think it's very interesting that the dupes do have independence and agency. I mean, that whole arc in X-Factor Investigations, where the Reverend John Maddox is in Vermont and living his best life with a wife and child. And Jamie's like, yeah, I'll let you continue doing your thing. It gives a nuance to that power, and also Jamie's internal struggle where he's like, this is an aspect of me, but also, is this a different being? Is this an independent person at this point? Just the way that Peter David sort of crafted the character's response to that, and how it sort of carried through. Like, John comes up again after that arc in the series and helps out Rain.
When you say helps out, it's not a good approach.
No, it's not, but it's a very Madrox approach.
He's like, fine, kill yourself then, throw yourself to hell. You think you're so horrible, then debase yourself.
You should whip yourself. Here's a cat of nine. Like, but the fact that he just exists out there gives it like more storytelling possibilities, which I know, Jason, like when you're tackling a character like this, you have to figure out, well, what pieces am I picking up and drawing upon and then creating my own thing, versus what things are just allowed to be out there still that are totally okay. I'm not going to touch on it, but somewhere in the world, there's a John Maddox, or maybe there's a dupe that's only in my brain that is like shelving books at the Library of Congress as a job or something like that.
So this is why I started with Gumby. If we picture Gumby, he puts on a cowboy hat and a belt and has a lasso, right? This is the thing Gumby does. And then he dupes himself. The other Gumby also has a hat and a lasso and a belt. And this is a Jamie Madrox thing too, right? Like, when he dupes himself, if he's carrying a gun, it dupes with him. If he's wearing a trench coat, it dupes with him. And that part of his powers is really weird for me. This is where Mark Grenwald would have to sit down and figure, like, where is this dimensional matter coming from? And we does like some sort of place that he transfers all the energy from. But if you consider it Gumby-like, where it's the bean ever grown, and every time the extract is always ready, unless his powers are blocked somehow, right?
Yeah, like, it makes you think about, like, if he had a $100 bill in his wallet, and then he multiplies himself by 100, and then he just collects all those bills into, like, one dupe, he's got lots of money, and, like, he's a very well-financed superhero, and he didn't need to win that game show to help fund his little private eye business. Like, there's many ways where he's able to be well off financially.
In a similar vein, I mean, one of the dupes, like the Reverend that we've seen, is independent. I think it was Charles Soule in a She-Hulk had Matt Rocks, the sleazy Hollywood entertainment lawyer that Jamie doesn't reabsorb, on the condition that Matt Rocks sends him 50% of all of his profits every year. And it's the same sort of thing where this is originally a dupe for Madrox, who's gone off and become this like perma-tanned sleazy Hollywood attorney. And it's like, this is part of Madrox, but he's also okay with not reabsorbing this because it's profitable.
So there's a lot of kinds of Jamie stories. Scott, you referenced him as just kind of a regular guy, right? If in his first appearance, he's been driven mad because he's been alone for so long. We'll be talking about that in a little while. It's a delightful issue, mostly because the thing is like the Donald Duck of the Marvel Universe. He makes me all the time. But there's an energy about this character being the regular guy where he has now, Jason, as you referenced, had the skills of the doctor and the astronaut and the pilot and the spy all downloaded, but he still just takes whatever job anyone needs him to have. He's a character that's very easy to direct and be given purpose to, right? So in one story, he's working for Cyclops doing this thing, or Moira McTaggart. And another, he's trying to like branch out on his own, and he always ends up fighting some evil version of himself in, you know, from Fallen Angels onto a lot of versions of this character. There are also stories where Jamie used kind of as like a genetic fodder. He's the troops in the Age of Apocalypse, right? The Madri that can just be gunned down. It's like the hand ninjas that dissolve, or, you know, Gumby gets shot and just absorbs back into the main unit again. So the threat to the character sometimes doesn't feel very real. Sometimes they take that to a really wild place, like during Uncanny X-Men just before Krakoa, where different Madrox dupes all became a conscious consciousness or a body for one of Legion's personalities to inhabit, and they all had different superpowers. There's also that Multiple Man series where Jamie fights other versions of himself from other places that have powers.
My favorite part of Jamie is, he's an average guy. He's just trying his best. That's what makes him so grounded and it's so relatable, why I like him compared to like everyone else. Like when I mentioned earlier about like Nation X, X Factor being my favorite issue, like he comparing his leadership who compared to a veteran leader like Cyclops with the X-Men who's led most of mankind into utopia. And here is Jamie, who's got this like ragtag misfits of mutants. And they're kind of like a reflection of him in a way where like they're just people that are there for a good time. They're just trying to do their best, like for the betterment of everyone.
Let's talk about Jamie Madrox's love life.
Do we have to?
Yes, because this is an interesting reflection on, again, Everything Everywhere All at Once. There's this different version of me that's capable of that thing. Who are some of your favorite Jamie Madrox relationships?
It's himself.
He may use his powers for sex purposes. We do not know.
The Siren relationship before it goes very, very south was interesting. Partly, you know, they have that history going back to like Fallen Angels, but also Muir Island. And now spoilers for 20-year-old comics. I mean, accidentally absorbing the baby. That wasn't a good move.
No.
Siren is a character who has major parent issues, right? Mom died, dad abandoned her, gay uncle raised her, alcoholic. This is an era in comics. It's so soap opera to me because her dad just died. And then she rushes into a relationship and decides to have a baby with Jamie Madrox. That was her life decision. It doesn't end well, girl.
I did enjoy Puppy Love, that kind of developed between Jamie and Siren from Fallen Angels and then Muir Island. And I liked how it kind of matured before the whole baby absorption scene, but felt like, you know, high school sweethearts that are finally getting it together and then Jamie fucks it up.
Jamie and Monet?
No, she doesn't need him.
No.
She, and I'm sure that she just wanted to break him.
It's very you're cute and I'm drunk energy from her.
Yes. Which if we're talking about dupes, then you really get into like the dupe of it all with that drunken night and Harry, Monet, and he and a dupe, like, which could be the title of a 1960s sex comedy, but instead we got it in a comic in the 2010s. So I think it's interesting now to look at what you've written, Jason, and things in terms of the smoothing out of the relationship with Layla and sort of how it is a healthy relationship. But when you're reading through the development of it in X-Factor Investigations, like, it can make you go, ooh,
cringe. And
several turns you're like, I get it. I understand that she's obviously an adult now, but just last week she was like 9. So
we have to ignore that whole like, what was Jamie a groomer? Like, let's put that way behind us.
I'm going to address this out loud very quickly because it's a discussion point. The Jamie Madrox Layla Miller story. We have a thing early at Marvel where there were old implications in the 1960s that Reed Richards was a college student in the house where Sue Storm was like 11 years old. And there's very much a like, oh, you're a pretty little girl. Maybe I'll find you when you grow up energy. And like, she grew up watching this adult, like working in her home while he was in college and then went on to have his babies. Like, it's very that energy. And they've had to retcon it as a result because that old, okay, go back to the Candy Southern Smut episode once again for the conversation that time period and the idea of the male gaze. This energy for Jamie Madrox and Layla Miller, Layla's a character introduced during the House of M. She knows stuff. There's a lot of mystery about her because we learn later she went to the future and learned a whole bunch of crazy stuff and now she knows stuff because of that. But her power actually is to resurrect something without a soul. And she flirts with Jamie a lot and is like, I'm gonna marry you when I grow up. And she's like 13 or something. But then at some point in the comic, she does go forward to the future, grows up, and then comes back hot. And suddenly Jamie's like, oh, hi. And now they're happily married and have a child. So they are the same age. It's kind of like she went off to school somewhere.
I just came off of presenting Alpha Flight at the Uncanny Experience, where you have Byrne being John Byrne, where Heather Hudson is like 17 and Mac is 10 years older.
Something I got to in character make fun of Daryl so much for. I was dressed as Box and Daryl was James. I got to say things like, well, you may be the hero, but your wife says I'm better in bed because I slept with his wife. It was really fun. We got to do lots of that.
And But it gets even worse, and it does get to the Sue Storm stuff, where you have Purple Girl, then you have Whitman Knapp, Mannequin. Where they're like holding hands and going out, and legit in the comics, Purple Girl is 13 at that time, and he is a doctor. He has an MD. And that was the 1980s Mantlow stuff, where like you're still dancing around issues like this, where you're like, oh, gross. Like, even when I am going to be covering that in various mediums, like, it's something you can't shy away from necessarily when you're doing an analysis of. When you're continuing a story forward, I think it's easier to, again, just like Madrox does, extract things that will help move a story along. And the other stuff, you're like, it happened, it's problematic, we're not going there again, sort of thing.
There's some stories where it's okay. And speaking as an ethical social worker who has to figure out complicated ethics, Jamie didn't do anything wrong when it comes to Layla. Everything was above board. It's very Colossus and Kitty Pryde energy in that, like, oh, this is a little uncomfortable, but he never stepped over that line. In other situations, those stories are much more problematic.
So we're saying that Jamie Madrox, unproblematic hero, if you take anything away from this episode.
Yes.
Jamie's ordinariness when it comes to his powers is really interesting to me. It's almost like he sends his dupes out to have the life that he could never have. If we take a character like Sinister, and Sinister integrates the power to dupe himself, that suddenly becomes a very scary power, right? Because all the Sinisters are going to go out and experiment on all of the things. Or we take a character like Wolverine, and who has the power to dupe himself. Jamie, as an agent of his own, like, am I in charge of my own destiny, or am I the result of, like, helpless waves of force that just put me in whatever direction, right? It's almost like he sees these reflections of himself. I'm almost surprised he's not weaponized more. Like, the supervillain clones him and suddenly has, you know, 1,000 dupe bombs because they've all got wires, and then they dupe and all the bombs dupe with them, you know? Like, there's a lot of potential for different types.
Well, I mean, I don't want to spoil things, but I've read Jason's mind, and wait until Dazzler issue 4. You won't even believe what they do with Jamie.
Well, it's
no comment.
Yeah. I mean, it's very the 2000s ultimate line. Ultimate Madrox is a terrorist. He's with Magneto's Brotherhood. They kind of did this in the Fox X-Men movies, where Dr. McSteamy played Jamie Madrox. And it is a sort of glimpse of how scary Madrox could actually be. Just put him towards terrorism, and you suddenly have 30 Brooks.
So I grew up with Jamie Madrox and X-Factor. Learning the history of this character is almost kind of new for me. Again, I'm the handbook guy, but I love giving a character thought. We will inevitably do the trial of Jamie Madrox in my show in 2025. All three of you are very likely invited. So now that we've had this like wet our whistle conversation, but I can't schedule it yet. I can only do 3 months at a time, or my brain ADHD is not my friend. The thing we loved about Jamie in the 90s is his friendship with Strong Guy. It's that old Iceman Beast energy from like the early X-Men. It's hijinks. Jason, you are a writer who has done a lot of Jamie Madrox stuff in recent years. What is it about that you love about this character, his kind of humor, and his friendship with Strong Guy specifically?
I think it just reminds me of like hanging out with my best friends and just having like all these good times and just taking those good moments and putting that in a comic with Jamie Madrox and Guido. That's pretty much it. And when I'm working with them, see them as like the Laurel and Hardy of the X titles. When I'm using them in story, like they're playing in their own universe, in their own misadventures as they're figuring out their own friendship like around Krakoa, you know, like post Peter David's X Factor, especially when Guido became the Lord of Hell. Like, I wanted to try to bring that relationship back and like bring Strong Guy in a more lighthearted mindset compared to what he was when he was in Hell. I just love their chemistry.
The character of Strong Guy is a hard one for me. He's dopey, right? He's very like the mask, like Jim Carrey kind of energy almost. He's cartoonish, this giant torso and his little wispy hair thing. But I think it's the idea, this kind of gets me on a therapy level, like the character who's always in pain, but he like chooses to smile through the vulnerability as his defense mechanism. But there's like, you're always like one snap of the fingers away from that like deep emotional pain that he carries. And that about that character makes me very uncomfortable for some reason. He's not a character I've ever really warmed to because of that discomfort, but I still like him. Jamie uses humor more to just like, it's like all he knows how to do. Like Iceman, like he has to fill the void because he can't be silent ever. So there's Jamie doing conga lines. What are some of your favorite Jamie funny moments? We had the earlier reference to three of him wake up in bed with three different people in the same house.
I mean, Scott said it with Kermit, that it's iconic at this point, getting clubbed by a Muppet, by one of your own dupes wielding it. That if you want to encapsulate hijinks, Madrox hijinks in one panel, it's that.
Yeah, you can't top that, really.
There's a, forgetting which issue it is, there's another issue of 90s X-Factor where he creates a dupe inside of a guy, and the guy explodes, and Quicksilver, who's little sociopathic sometimes, comes up and goes, Madrox, I didn't know you had it in you. That was incredible. And Jamie just throws up on Quicksilver's boots, and Pietro's just like, these were new boots. And it's like, actually, yeah, your power can be horrifying.
Again, the Pink Eye episode. That's where we don't take our comics. Jamie's in an interesting place in the comics now. He's married. He's kind of bad at being a husband. He doesn't like sitting still very much, is kind of the vibe. He keeps throwing himself into work. But he's also kind of, it's almost like they're writing him a little bit lately as like the CEO of his own line of dupes, where he's, you know, checking in and like giving them jobs and like checking and stamping timesheets. Like, go off work for a while, you know, punch out, and then I'll reabsorb you for the night. And then, you know, you're back to work the next morning. It's interesting because the Prime gets to have that good life while the others all go to the factory. That's kind of the energy that I get. Jason is currently writing Jamie in Dazzler right now, which is delightful. Are you having fun revisiting this character?
Oh yeah, I love it. He's a one-man production team. He's doing it all. He's the security team, but you know, Domino is there as head of security to make sure he's in line, because he can't be a master of everything. So like, he needs a security expert like Domino to lead him, but you know, he does everything else. Like he's coordinating backstage, and he's also Dazzler's backup dancers.
Jason, we have to spend just a minute celebrating your diversity and just wonderfulness as a creator. The difference in the types of stories that you're writing and how you're capturing different things, Sentry versus Werewolf versus Dazzler. I love the unique takes you get. I love the way you are approaching characters over arcs. I'm a big fan of yours, and you're the nicest person. Focusing on Dazzler specifically, I've only read issue one at this point. Your lyrics, I don't know the tunes to these songs, but they were playing in my head anyway. The story with Shark Girl having to hide her identity, and like Dazzler wrestling with like how far to push that diversity line. Like, I gotta be mutant, but not too mutant, but I gotta not speak against mutant, but I can't speak too much. That like exhausting balance, but also seeing her living her best fucking complicated life. Beautiful work, my friend. I loved the first issue.
Thank you so much. Thank you. The first issue, I really wanted just to cover all that ground before things start to fall apart in her tour. It's just gonna go downhill from here. But you know, the first issue is more like, this is how like ideally her show should run smoothly, like how it should go. In terms of like her songs, yeah, like Out and Proud was that was like her Miss Americana song. Like I was using Taylor Swift Miss Americana as inspiration for that, and just trying to take the right rhythmic beats and just transplanting Dazzler's story into that.
Well, and then there's also that thing where the rock star Taylor Swift especially will write the song about her ex-boyfriend, you know, Miley Cyrus, Alanis Morissette, they all do it, but they never name the boyfriend. When Dazzler's singing about Angel, she like literally like sings the name War and right into the song. And I was like, oh.
And there's more coming up. Thing is, like, I felt like my songwriting got better after each issue. So like, I'm kind of happy with even like the song that I wrote for issue number 4, which I think everyone's going to be pleased about. She has a song. It's about Longshot.
Of course it is.
There you Perfect. Go. And I
had
just
a baby who's his own grandpa.
And that was kind of challenging because, you know, like they go through like this, all these adventures, especially in like the Mojoverse and the future, where some of it's kind of forgotten and like who remembers what? I'm trying to like recollect. No, I'm pretty happy with that song. And Rafael Loureiro, who's the artist for Dazzler, he designed a Longshot inspired outfit for her in New York show. It looks so stunning. I'm blown away by it.
I would just like to say, as a Jamie Madrox cosplayer, thank you for the backup dancer dupe look, because I'm always looking for new things to add to the arsenal. And I was reading the issue when it came out, and I was laughing so hard I had to actually put it down when I saw the dupes in the background with like the parachute pants. Chef's kiss.
I just wrote, have Dazzler with dupe backup dancers, and Raphael like came up with his look. So like, yeah, like thank Raphael for his look. He really nailed it on that one. I love it.
I mean, mean, I hope that you heard the buzz before the title came out. And I know that being a creator and being online can sometimes lead you to cesspools. But I hope you like caught on to the positivity and the excitement that people had, even when the title was announced. Nothing else, just Dazzler. The continued enthusiasm for it now that issue one is out. I hope Marvel is paying attention. I hope that they spin things out of this because you're doing an exceptional job writing it. And by it, I mean the entire title and all the characters in it. So I hope they give you more opportunities, perhaps for an ongoing. Marvel, I know you're listening. Give us an ongoing with this cast of characters.
You guys are so kind. Like, no, thank you so much. No. Thankfully, there's a bit more coming outside of this miniseries. I'll just say that.
Okay. This fall is just such a feast for Dazzler fans. I know I have it on pre-order. The omnibus of Original Dazzler by Tom DeFalco should be delivered, I think, like next week or the week after. Like, we are feasting right now between your current title and then the legacy stuff that's being re-released. It's just so much great Dazzler content where people can just dive in.
Okay, we're going to transition to the latter half of the show. Giant Size Fantastic Four was out in 1975. I don't think I have read this comic since like 1995. I mean, I just haven't, it hasn't crossed my path on the show because I haven't needed to for any of the characters I've covered so far, but I do remember it. This is a wild issue. The reason they called things Giant Size was simply because it was a large magazine, right? Marvel has the opportunity to reprint some old stories. It gives you certain publishing deals if you do a certain number of whatevers, right? So at this era, there was a lot of Giant Size Spider-Man, Giant Size X-Men, which we'll get to, Giant Size Man-Thing, which is hilarious. Despite the sticky glob on the cover, it's a lot. But in this particular issue, we have Len Wein and Chris Claremont working together as writers. Chris is barely new at Marvel at this point, has been writing some horror stories and some fill-in issues. When he picks a character up somewhere, he usually takes them with him, right? Which is why we see Ms. Marvel tie into X-Men, and there's all these types of things from his stories. So here's an issue where he's creating multiple man, and he's going to bring him into the X-Men later. The pencils on this issue are by John Buscema, Joe Sinnott on inks, Glennis Wein on colors, John Costanza on letters, and Len Wein is also the editor. The title of this issue from February 1975 is Madrox the Multiple Man, but the cover identifies him as Madrox the Multiple Menace, which is just a cruel read.
But I know that Scott and I both have signed issues from Chris Claremont. Mine was last year, so it's slabbed. Mine is a very generous 7.0. I don't know who was grading that day at CGC, but thank you.
And I got two signed by Chris Claremont. This is one of my two reading copies, and I got like two more that are just in my long box.
And it's a tough issue to find in great condition because of that giant size format. Just to get into comic collecting for like the spine breaks can happen really easily because it's not a stapled issue. Well, it's stapled inside, but the cover is then glued on. So it makes it really rigid so it doesn't flex as much. So you get spine breaks on almost every one that I've seen.
Scott, will you tell us about the cover of this book?
The cover is fantastic. You have multiple dupes fighting the Fantastic Four. Johnny Storm has just been laid out flat. He's unconscious.
It looks like he's got like unshaved hair just growing out of patches. The Fire looks like blonde hair.
Right. For X-Men fans who might not be familiar with the Fantastic Four in this era, the lineup with the Fantastic Four is not the classic lineup. This is one of the eras in which Medusa of the Inhumans is on the team.
One of the first of many times they were really trying to make the Inhumans happen.
So Medusa is grappling with another dupe wrapped up in hair. It looks like two dupes are taking on Ben Grimm in this. Madrox can also go toe-to-toe with the Thing. Don't worry about it. Another one's grappling with Reed, and you get, you know, a circle that says action and the Mighty Marvel manner. It's dynamic. Madrox looks like he's 45, even though he's supposed to be 21. One of my favorite things about the physical copy of it, though, is you get the 70s ads on the back, and this is also a very Jamie Madrox thing. There's an extraordinarily dangerous Evel Knievel toy that's like a stunt rocket. This is how a dupe loses their eye. So
Jason, will you talk to us a little bit about Madrox's kind of classic costume and insignia and what makes this look unique or special? It's very specific to this character.
So it's like a very green Zentai suit covered with yellow circles and yellow lines that help neutralize his duplication process. Otherwise, without it, like I guess his powers will just go out of control. Like he will just be able to make lots of dupes, maybe just by like tapping the table or whatever. So yeah, yeah, he's in a full body suit to help prevent accidents.
I'm picturing myself in like eighth grade science and they're playing like the Carl Sagan video and it's talking about like cellular mitosis or whatever. And there's like a little glowing orb that comes out and then it splits into two, but there's a line connecting them. And then they split into two more, but there's lines connecting those and like the grid expands. That's kind of what his suit like gives me that energy. It like looks like it's multiple forms of something spreading. Like two of you have this shirt on right now. This is a very unique design to this character. And I really like it. So we're going to establish just a couple things about Jamie Madrox before we jump in. Again, this is one of the last Silver Age books we'll be covering. And there are a few things that make this very Silver Age. Number one, retroactive continuity is going to tell us, although it's not widely explored, that Charles Xavier helped Jamie Madrox's family settle in an isolated place because they had a mutant child that could dupe himself. Jamie's powers develop at birth, like the doctor spanks him, he splits in two. We'll talk about it in just a minute. Also, the parents are well connected enough to have some sort of resource to have this child wear a suit that blocks his powers. And really, the only time we ever see that in the 60s is with the character Larry Trask, who wears the big chonky amulet that blocks his powers. Later, we're going to see technology where you put the collar on and it blocks your powers, right? But this is a suit very specific for his power set in the way that Havix is for him. So there's some sort of odd connections between the parents who we don't ever see widely explored. Third thing, Jamie's dad works in a nuclear research facility. So there's the idea that he's worried that the atomic energy is what created his son as a mutant. These are themes we see explored with like Necra and Mandrill and Beast and Xavier. The idea of like nuclear radiation causing the mutation. Let me hear your thoughts on these kind of connections with Jamie to the mutant cause that are explored after this issue. He is very clearly identified as a mutant in this comic book.
Well, yeah, it mentions like in his origin that his dad worked at the Los Alamos Nuclear Center.
We've never seen this explored in the comic books.
It was interesting to me that it really is one of those last vestiges of the Silver Age where it's like, well, nuclear bombs could have done this, or nuclear energy could have done this, because Claremont, as you said, is very early in his career, but then you don't really get a whole lot of that once the X-Men are reignited under him. Like, that's sort of an idea that's just tossed to the wayside. So this may be one of the last appearances where someone is presented as it's a possibility. It's not said outright that this is the cause, but there's that connection point that's just like totally thrown away in the future. Like, no one needs it anymore.
Particularly with mutation acting often as a puberty metaphor, you know, mutants' powers activate around when they're 12, 13. Madrox comes out of the womb with his powers activated, which is unusual for Silver Age X-Men character. And it's also unusual actually for modern characters. And I know Peter David explores this quite a bit, but Madrox is one of the few mutants that we see just born immediately with powers.
Weird. Okay, you guys are getting this real time, so I have to form my thoughts. Okay, Silver Age mutants. There are four characters. I have not done a representative study on this, so this is early thoughts. There are four characters that are born with their powers. Jamie Madrox, Beast, who has his big feet, Mandrill, who comes out looking like a monkey, and Necra, who comes out looking like a vampire. All four of those stories are the stories where their parents worked at a nuclear research facility. That's crazy to me. All four of them with obvious mutations at birth. Those are literally the four stories, discounting Xavier, whose dad died in a nuclear explosion when he was 10. That's weird. I don't know. Thoughts?
Sounds like a chapter in a book to me.
The mutant babies. That was not intentional on the part of the writers. Whoa, that was a crazy realization.
I wonder if it's, they had early exposure with a nuclear center compared to mutants who developed their powers like during puberty. Like maybe they went for a bike ride to their nearest nuclear plant. And
in the case of Beast, Mandrill, and Necra, all of their parents were like in a building when there was like a nuclear radiation overload, and then they had children afterward. Like, it's a direct thing. We don't have that directly referenced with Madrox, but like literally the New Mexico atomic energy plant, which is the Black Widow.
Implications are there.
Crazy. Oh my god, I have so many stories to write.
I hope you wrote down that note so you can explore it later.
Yes.
I have so many stories to write, y'all. Okay, Silver Age database in my brain. It's exhausting. I hope for the opportunity one day. All right, we're going to jump into this issue. On my show, when we do fashion review panels, we will look at some fashion and give it a snicked or a kicked. A snicked meaning you love it. A kicked meaning it's got to go. Jason, if you will tell us, is it a snicked or a kicked for the Thing's fashion choices on page one of this issue? Tell us about his look.
That's a snick. He looks boss. He's got lots of swagger. I kind of dig it, and I think only Thing can pull that off.
Yeah, he's got like big yellow loafers, like blue slacks, the biggest like rapper coat you've ever seen. It's like fluffy red and black, like fur coat fringe, like giant blue striped scarf, and a hat and a cane with something. I don't know what it says on his cane. There's like a word. Oh, it's Jets. They were just at the
Yeah.
Jets.
Yeah, so yeah. The inspiration is that Joe Namath would wear fur coats. So he references Joe Namath as like his favorite player. So it's taking the inspiration from that.
Daryl, is it a snicked or a kicked for Alicia Masters look on page one?
Oh, it's a snicked. Like she has those thigh high blue or black, depending on how you want to interpret the shading, boots. I'm going to go with blue because that's the theme here. She also has a blue and white. No, that's Ben's blue and white scarf getting in her face. Rude.
It's
but she just has like this
bit...
long jacket that's fur trimmed. I'm going to say it's fake fur because
yeah,
fur
but it's giving murder. Me a little bit like Mrs. Yes. Claus. I'm not sure I'm here for it.
The big pom-pom buttons. And I mean, you're going to a football game in an outdoor stadium in the tri-state area. It looks like it's November-ish. Like you want a warm coat.
So Alicia Masters, one of my all-time favorite characters. God, Ryan North is writing her so amazingly in Fantastic Four right now, where she's part of like the main group. Love, love, love. These two, again, I read the Thing as Donald Duck almost always, but these two in this issue are giving me very, like the couple from The Honeymooners, where he's like, to the moon, Alice. And she's like,
I kind of see more like Archie Bunker.
Yeah, no? Yeah, there's a little bit of that, like very comical energy, almost like George Burns and his assistant, whose name I've forgotten.
Gracie.
Yeah, Gracie Allen. Yeah, yeah. The Thing's walking down the road. I'm not going to read a lot of dialogue, but there's a, I'll tell you, Alicia, honey, just watching that Joe Namath going out for a long one gives me galloping goosebumps. Benjamin J. Grimm, what am I going to do with you? Like, they're very much that. They're going and they're going to miss the train, so they have to rush for it. And the Thing tries to catch the door, but ends up like ripping it off. This is a problem with this character. The property damage bills that Reed Richards must have to cover on a daily basis with this man as his brother is just sheerly exhausting. There's hijinks. They get on the subway. There is like a brake crash and Thing's trying to figure out what's going on. He climbs on the roof of the subway for some reason and moves all the way to the front, which is where he meets Madrox the Multiple Man.
I think taking your blind girlfriend to see the mid-70s Jets is actually the only humane way to see the mid-70s Jets. They were not good. Yeah, they're going out to Queens. The Jets were playing at Shea Stadium, where the Mets also played. The physical comedy is great. I think Ben says, you know, they get a summons and he says, honey, if you think they was upset, just wait till Reed gets the repair bill. And I
this,
love
and
that.
This is like where you clue the laugh track.
Ben Grimm is a menace. If I ever write, like get a PhD, my dissertation is going to be, why was Ben Grimm popular in the 70s and 80s? And the answer is because he was an everyman. But sometimes as I'm reading him, I'm easily annoyed by Ben Grimm. And I love that we were going to get to a point where he gets sort of the shit kicked out of him because he needs to be taken down a peg once in a while. He just like ripped a train open. Ben, there's another train coming in 5 minutes. Just wait a fucking second. Like, you don't need to do this.
That is spoken like a member of the Yancey Street gang. And
there's some real good Jason Lowe Thing stories out there in the future, I hope. You could write the shit out of this character, man.
Oh, yeah. It was fun having him interact with Strong Guy in my X-Men Unlimited stories.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, you did that, like, Madrox in space over
just,
there.
you are breathing new life into the Werewolf by Night franchise. I think you need to take another 70s franchise on with Marvel 2-in-1. Just, you can have Ben Grimm and then whoever you want to dig up, give it to us.
Oh, because... if we're doing 70s, I want to see Jason writing supervillain team up instead.
Ooh.
I'm already like dipping into like the kung fu aspect of Marvel. So yeah, I got 70s horror, 70s disco, and now kung fu.
Early invitation when I schedule it to the Trial of the Silver Samurai at some point, Jason. It's going to be a whole thing. Okay, Scott, will you tell us what happens on the train tracks?
Ben, as he's clamoring over the top of the train and he's yelling that he's assumes this is going to be a Yancey Streeter out to screw with him. And you get a huh? And there in his glowing glory is Jamie Madrox. And, you know, the Thing expected a teenage tough, perhaps, somebody high on vapors, pills.
He expected to find someone huffing from a paper bag like spray paint. That's what he was expecting.
Yeah. And Madrox declares, you are different like me. I am Madrox, with no context. And the Thing is just like, I don't know what that is.
He's giving very like, I'm an alien unfamiliar with your planet. You are like me. Like, it's very odd for this character.
Ben's yelling at him to get off the tracks. And Jamie's like, well, I'll stay here until I know what's going on. I mean, the Thing is going to do one thing, and that's it's clobbering time. So he rips off his fur coat and shirt and just jumps at Jamie Madrox.
And Jamie is glowing green here, which is very radioactive also. Maybe he just duped himself and the energy glow is still there or something. But it looks like he, if you touch him, you will get radiation poisoning.
But that doesn't hold Ben Grimm back at all. He doesn't care. Nothing can get through that tough hide.
Jamie's weirdly super strong here.
Ben takes a swing at him, and shockingly, Madrox duplicates. So now there's two of them. And Ben is, you know, I don't believe it. And they just proceed then to beat the crap out of him for like four or five pages. They throw him off the elevated train line.
When he dupes himself, I want to talk briefly again, the radioactivity here, like the images it uses to show the dupes. Jamie seems to, in modern comics, be drawn more like, not with energy, but like there's just kind of like, it's more Gumby, right? Like I form from one to two, vision of the person. But here we have like glowy green energy where Jamie glows green and you see almost like an X-ray weird version of him. Then in the next panel, you see those two things divide, like that Neil deGrasse Tyson video I referenced earlier. The two cells become one. They come out of it, are still glowing green. And then when they throw a punch, they're not glowing green. It's just a really interesting effect. It's really giving me radioactivity here.
Yeah. And, you know, the Thing keeps making more and more dupes because he's throwing garbage cans. The dupes fall down. That creates even more dupes. He ends up fighting about six or seven dupes at once, and they actually manage to knock the Thing out, which is impressive.
Jamie falls off a bridge, and it's like a pretty rough fall. Like, it should kill him, but instead it just, you know, multiplies him more.
He's fine. It's the suit.
Suit. Yeah.
And it's a suit that makes him even look bulkier, too. Like, they really, like, make him look like this very strong, unstoppable supervillain in his first moments.
It's giving almost, like, Quicksilver, you know, Quicksilver runs up and punches you 1,000 times a second. This is that, except Jamie, there's just 1,000 Jamies all punching you at once. It's that like group punch shot that always everybody find a punch spot and now hold your position and just punch until
the Thing is famously a character, particularly in this era, who goes toe-to-toe with the Hulk. For Jamie Madrox to be able to knock him out, it's a little artistic license.
So we move to the Thing, who has back with the Fantastic Four, and something has happened to me this year, my friends. It's worse every time. I cannot read Mr. Fantastic as anything but a horror character now. There's something about his gross, stretchy body. I've read enough. I did the read-through for the Franklin Richards trial, and I'm like, this character is horrifying. Erica Schultz, you converted me. Reed Richards is a monster. So he's wrapping his goopy, weird arm, it's also very Gumby, around the Thing as they're trying to figure out what's going on. Who or what is Madrox? He's figuring out his memories. There's this smarmy moment where Johnny Storm is walking away. He like is bragging, by the way, you know, Namath's boys blew it 49 to 27, but his like little side look and his like perfectly feathered hair as the Thing's like rah in the background, it really makes me happy. And this is just one more fucking thing to ruin Thing's day. Any thoughts on the Johnny Thing relationship? One of my favorite relationships in comics, frankly.
They play off of each other so well, even up to the current run by Ryan North. They just have this camaraderie, and I feel it's leveled out to understanding. Back then, during this issue, it's very much the annoying younger brother. That is the role that Johnny Storm plays for, dare I say, decades. It can still manifest itself, but that was his main character trait on the team forever, was annoying younger brother. This is the very short span of time where he's in his red uniform. He and Ben are able to level with each other that neither of them can do with Reed, because Reed is so intimidatingly smart that at times I feel they're reserved with him, where they can just be one another with the two of them.
So if you're not reading Ryan North's Fantastic Four, everybody, it's so good. good. One of my top five favorite titles at Marvel right now. Reed reports, hey, Con Edison just sent in a report about some selective power failures across the city in the last few hours. The situation's growing critical. Power bills are going up everywhere. It's just very, it's so silly. And he points at this like graph that he's taken. Basically, these pulses are corresponding with the appearance of Madrox on the train for some reason. And Madrox is still glowing green. We see him wandering the streets all alone in isolation, urine yellow all around him. He thinks back to his origins. Jason, tell us the story of James Madrox.
He was Christian James Arthur Madrox, son of Daniel and Joan, born September 7th, 1953. So this issue came out in 1975. That makes him, 21 years old. Yeah, like first flashback scene is the infamous baby smacking scene where the doctor smacks his bottom and duplicates into two babies.
This is the moment you wish you didn't see. It's the embarrassing baby photo, but it's out there.
And so that's when Daniel and Joan discover that their son is a mutant. So Daniel, the father, he leaves his nuclear plant job to reside in a farm in Kansas where James Madrox can live alone with his parents and be homeschooled. And he has to live with this suit that's been constructed by, I guess, his father? A special suit?
Or again, there's connections to Xavier.
Yeah. I guess Xavier might have had some consultation with the suit, maybe.
I blame Forge.
Well, I don't know. Like, this was way past Forge, was it?
Forge is involved in the X-Men early years. He was involved in, like,
so it was retcon
back at the beginning. Yeah, yeah.
So James had to make friends with himself, playing baseball, doing some farm work in their Kansas home, and be homeschooled. And unfortunately, it took a tornado that took the lives of his parents.
A freak tornado across the farm one human. July afternoon, when the storm had passed, Jamie Madrox was an orphan. I want to picture this whole page as like a Christmas story energy. It's the guy talking about his childhood. This scene between Jamie and his mother, it's the only one we have, but it tells us everything. He's got a ball, like baseball and a mitt on, and she's like zipping up his green weird suit. And he goes, Mom, why do I have to wear this funny suit? She goes, it's not funny, Jamie. It's special. A special suit for my special son. And that's everything you need. This the narration back at the beginning too. Madrox watched the streets of Midtown Manhattan alone and most confused. He would have been here sooner, but he got lost in Queens.
Cross
why
the
that
bridge.
Line is necessary, I have no idea. But again, it tells you everything you need to know about Jamie Madrox. Scott, I know you have thoughts on the baby slap scene.
Medicine has changed greatly since the 1950s. Just from like a legal perspective, you cannot hit a child. It's funny when this is like referenced. Is this referenced again in X-Factor Investigations? And it's like, this generally had to freak his parents out quite a bit. I mean, to the point of leaving their jobs and moving across the country.
If someone could redo this scene, again, if I ever write a Jamie Madrox scene, I'm going to try to put this in. The doctor has the two babies in his one hand by like 4 feet in 4 fingers, right? We keep the same panel, but the babies are fully peeing on his face. Right? That would be amazing, right?
Oh boy.
Scott, did your mom ever make a special suit for her special son?
Can't say that she did.
After the passing of his parents, he continues his farm life, tending to the crops. And I'm wondering, because like, does the crops get outsourced anywhere, or is he just eating them all? Like, because he's not interacting with anyone.
Where is he getting the gas for the tractor?
Well, is he one guy in his suit that he never takes off running this farm, or does he create dupes every day, send them off to work, and then they all report back at the end of the day? Because that makes more sense to me. He learns to live in a community of Jamie Madroxes.
And that's a story we need to explore as well.
I have story ideas.
Yeah, one day his suit disrupts. There's this power disruption with all the electricals in his house. Like the TV explodes, his lamp explodes.
He starts absorbing electricity, which is why he's been glowing yellow the whole issue. He's like overwhelmed with some sort of weird power source because because his suit is like malfunctioning and like gathering energy. And like, if you touch him, he's going to blow up kind of thing. It's an odd story for this character.
And then he just decides to like just ditch his home and just go to New York City and and gets drawn to this building like a firefly to a lamp.
So he's moving toward the Fantastic Four, who are working in the labs. They're studying the power. And as Jamie gets closer, all of their electrical equipment starts to kind of flip out a little bit. And they're like, oh no, everything's overloading. Medusa, hush, listen. Johnny says, I hear it. Medusa, the sound of heavy footsteps on the roof. Well, if it's Ben's former playmate, he's going to get a hotter reception than he bargained for. Flame on. So we're going to have the flaming Human Torch go up to meet Jamie Madrox on the roof. And neither of them will ever be the same. I am Madrox. He's looking for someone who can help him. Daryl, tell us about this little fight.
Yeah, so the Human Torch, Hothead, just tries to blast Madrox with flames. Doesn't do it much of anything. They're hurting him, but doesn't inhibit Jamie from just clocking Johnny when he flies in to hit him with something else. And Johnny is even like, I didn't even really hit him with that powerful of a flame. It's not like this is a Nova Blast.
There's an image of like Jamie Madrox engulfed in flame and he screams and Johnny's like, what's the big deal? It was just a little fire. I didn't incinerate you.
And so, and then Jamie says, hurt me? You cannot hurt me, which is a lie. We just saw 2 pounds ago. And then he says, you can only die. Like, this escalated super quickly. All of a sudden we're murdering people. Johnny is clocked so badly. Like, he's falling off the building. His flame goes off. Reed rescues him with his long stretchy arm. And Medusa is also contributing hair to the cause, where I feel she's trying to loop it around Jamie. I think there might be a lost...
just so fucking weird. She's using the thing as like a base for her foot while lifting her knee. And it looks like she's pulling at a rope, but it's her own hair. It's so weird.
It really is. Ben punches. He didn't learn his lesson because he punches Jamie, who duplicates again. Surprise. And the dupes
not again.
Either side, punch Ben Grimm. Medusa's like whipping a dupe with her hair, throws him down on the ground. Did not just see what happened. He duplicates. So you're getting multiple men. Reed tries to tie them up. That's not really successful because they're so strong. And
he's like fucking human taffy. He's wrapped around everything. It's so gross.
It's really gross, but also as gross as like one of the Madrox faces here with the wrapping looks almost vampiric. It's just a bad time for the Fantastic Four. The only reason that it comes to a halt is because a helicopter comes along.
But first thing punches Jamie again, who dupes again, and he goes, you know, this is getting kind of monotonous.
Reed's the only one who clues in on the fact that the more you hit him, the more he's going to duplicate.
Yeah, like, maybe I should try to restrain him rather than do anything to agitate him. And when I read this for the first time, I got to this page and I saw what was happening and I was like, a fucking course. Like, of course it's Charles beaming down from a helicopter. Like, yes, hear it in the background.
This is so fucking funny. There's a golden helicopter hovering in the sky. A vortex beam opens to the roof. And Xavier, in his 1920s wheelchair, is like lowering slowly out of the sky in like a glowing yellow energy. His name is Charles Xavier, dean of a most exclusive school in Westchester and renowned expert on the subject of mutants. But if you want, you can call him Professor X. And then gently the vortex beam fails and he goes careening out of the sky. It's my favorite part of the whole issue.
And Reed catches the wheelchair. Ben catches Charles. And then you have like the meeting of the minds with Reed and Charles, where he's like, I'm here for this dude. Like, yeah. And also I know like his entire backstory. It just took me a while to like get the chopper in the air and everything.
The thing like collects Xavier out of the sky, like gently places him in his wheelchair. Xavier's like, thanks. Don't worry about it, prof. It's all part of the job. So, okay, here's the again, Silver Age age madness that we haven't explored. Xavier says, years ago, I knew his father, Jamie Madrox. It was my suggestion that his family move to Kansas. When my special mutant detector Cerebro revealed Jamie Madrox to be in New York, I knew something was terribly wrong. That is why I'm here, my friends. For Jamie Madrox is my responsibility. Jamie says, who are you? What do you want with me? I am a friend of your parents, Jamie. I want to... My parents are dead! And one of the dupes sneaks up, but Medusa wraps her hair around his ankle and like trips him and falls down like cafeteria style, and he dupes again. Odd, that is not supposed to happen, says Xavier. Jamie's suit is designed to neutralize the duplication process. It should, of course! The suit is the core of our problem. It's been 6 years since Jamie's parents died, 6 years since this, which means Xavier knew he was there the whole time.
Yeah.
6 years since the suit was last overhauled. Some of the control elements must have burned out by now. And Reed's like, oh, we can fix this and the crisis will be over. This is really interesting, the Xavier Madrox connection. This is right before Charles Xavier launches the new team.
This is Professor X being Basil Exposition in Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, where Austin Powers is like, Vanessa was a fembot. And Basil Exposition is like, yes, sadly, we knew all along.
Yeah. Charles shows up and basically goes, oh yeah, this was my bad. I should have been keeping an eye on him. Whoops.
So the dupes are like gathering as a little army. They grab Reed, who's all squishy and gross. They grab Thing. One of the dupes has his hand directly on Thing's face, which cracks me up. And here's a 1960s, you know, this is the kind of stuff we won't see this language much longer in comics. Sheesh, how humiliating. Stop cold by three blame panty wastes. I could deck with one punch. Please no one use the term panty waste in any comic book anytime soon.
Also, he's lying. He can't defeat any of them with one punch.
Well, he hung off a train before, so I don't know. So Madrox also pushes the flaming human torch. Like, he notes, like, I'm blazing white hot, but they don't seem to feel it. So this energy is, like, causing him to go crazy. Another one grabs Medusa in a pose that Jason Lowe would describe as...
He's kind of, like, wrapping his arms around her like he's King Kong in a way. I don't know. It's a very barbaric hold.
For some reason, her arms are behind her back. She's literally got her hair around his neck. He's got one arm around her legs, one around her abdomen, and she's like awkwardly bent back against him. This is a weird panel. There's a few really odd ones in this. That one's very strange.
It's giving me Arrested Development and Toss Me.
So then we get this four-panel triptych of Xavier where it gets ever closer on his weird fucking eyebrows. And he goes, within seconds, only Charles Xavier is left free to act. Instantly, instinctively, his mind reaches out, the most powerful mind on the face of the earth. Delicately, he feels for the minds of Madrox's duplicates, senses them, enters them. His psychic energy, sifting the primal essence of their identical personalities, penetrating to the very core of their beings. And one by one, he snuffs those duplicate minds out. Holy fuck. Okay. First of all, there was a game we played when we were kids where we would like randomly open magazine pictures, and whatever photo you found, you had to pretend that the person is farting at the moment that the photo was taken. I've referenced this on the show before, but when you look at these four panels of Xavier and the fourth panel... Because his face,
it's giving you smelt that.
Okay, so did Charles Xavier just murder Jamie Madrox's dupes in his very first appearance? Is that what happened?
Yes, full stop. Yeah, he rendered about 30 dupes just brain dead.
Telepathically lobotomized them.
Now, Xavier, 1960s, the biggest thing we ever saw him do was repel the Xenox by uniting all of the human minds on Earth into one collective consciousness that repelled an alien away. See the stranger trial once again. The idea of him using his powers in unethical ways has not widely been explored in the comics yet to this point, right? He lied to the X-Men about being dead and like told Jean Grey. He's not always a good or ethical leader, but this is kind of the first example of Xavier doing something really shitty with his powers. And it's going to very quickly build into Giant Size X-Men, where he's leading a new team who start to question his leadership. The dupes just keeled over, just like that. I don't get it, says Johnny.
I mean, to give him the benefit of the doubt, he is familiar with Madrox, but I don't know if he really debates the ethics of, are these dupes separate persons? Are they part of Madrox? He just goes for the old massive stroke and knocks them out.
I mean, to say it out loud, Xavier did like erase Vanisher's identity and like Blob's knowledge of being a mutant and all of the kids' parents. He made them forget mutant stuff, right? All of those are unethical, but you're meant to read it as like contributing to the cause. But just killing a bunch of living beings, that's something. I don't know. You got to see it as like the dupes don't have life, but we know they do. So it's harsh. It's a really interesting story for that reason. Now, Mr. Fantastic horrifically fights Jamie Madrox once again. Jamie's like stretching him like taffy all over the place. Stop. You're tearing me apart. Stop or I'll hurt you. And the dupe is like wrapped up in Reed as he's trying to deactivate the suit until he finally renders it harmless. How do things conclude?
Well, very 70s, 80s, 90s sitcom. Like, it's just wrapped up very nicely. Charles is like, I'm going to take him back and I'll help him. And the Fantastic Four is like, oh, great. And look, the power's back on in the city. All's well.
Reed Richards says, thank you, Professor. The collapse of the boys' duplicates was your doing, was it not? Yes, it was. I have certain special abilities, Richards. I merely put them to proper use. What I did to Jamie's duplicates was not a pleasant experience, I assure you, but it was necessary. And Fing says, yeah, Prof, but since them dupes all vanished when Reed decked Madrox, what are you going to do about the kid? I will take him with me, Mr. Grimm. Given time and luck, I believe I can help him cure his madness and teach him to cope with his power. Yes, given time. And then we see the FF on a rooftop, kind of looking out into the sunset, thinking about how I wish for a world with no senseless violence. And Thing says, I said it before, Stretch, I'll say it again. You know how to take the fun out of anything. The end.
I mean, it doesn't really last because he ships Jamie off to Moira MacTaggert on Muir Island. At least he gets him some help, I guess.
Sometimes I share ideas on the show that I literally want to write stories about. There is a story here that has not been told. We see Jamie wandering the streets of New York mad. Something's going on in his brain and he's wearing an overcharged suit. And Charles Xavier is right there. There's some sort of story about the prequel of this and a way that Charles used Jamie in a particular way that resulted in a particular thing. And now he has to come in, kill the dupes and take Jamie away before the FF find out what's really going on. Like there's some story gold here.
Do you think Xavier used Madrox as a pawn for some kind of, I don't know, just trying to like test Reed somehow?
We're meant to believe that Xavier left Jamie on that farm for 6 years by himself, but
he's playing a long game.
Well, he can change your memories of things. Also, he doesn't bring Jamie in giant size number one. Where does he send Jamie instead?
Europe. Yeah.
Where? Muir Island to live with and work for.
Myra Tagger.
Boy, is there some story there too. So I think Jamie has a really interesting perspective as kind of the last mutant introduced with the Silver Age ending. And the potential of this character in his place in X-Men history, I think, is really fascinating.
You're proposing Madrox the Hidden Years.
Or Xavier the Hidden Years, but Madrox is a real big character in all of that. I have so many Silver Age stories to tell. I love this issue. I think it's rad. It's so fun. And this like surprise with Xavier at the end is brilliant.
No, this is a pretty strong debut for Madrox, just to kind of show like how powerful he can be. And I'm going to guess that the reason why he had an advantage on Thing, he read lots of comics as a kid and he looked at some of those martial arts ads in a comic and took up on like learning some of those skills to study some pressure points. And he probably just used that to his advantage because like he's, if you look at his trading cards, he's pretty strong in his fighting skills.
You look for the good in everyone, my friend.
The whole Charles sequence is just horrific. Hilarious, but horrific. From him tumbling out of the helicopter. And I have questions. Who's flying the helicopter? I mean, is Beast just sitting up there going like, damn, that's crazy.
I think it's Moira. Moira did something shitty and now Charles has to clean up her mess.
Yes. There's your story connection.
Oh no, I've already got it in my brain. It's already laid out.
it's a great introduction for the character. I think it's a fun bit of trivia that Jamie Madrox starts out as a Fantastic Four villain actually. And yeah, really enjoy this issue.
This issue also reprints, we've reviewed it on my show already, but the old story where the Puppet Master makes a puppet of Charles Xavier and like mind controls the X-Men for a while. That's a crazy one. Go back and see the Trial of the Puppet Master.
It was just a fun ride of an issue. When I picked it up for the first time, I didn't know what to expect. Each page was such a different take on the character that I feel I've grown to know so well through X-Factor Investigations. And just seeing where that character originated from and how he was utilized as a villain, and then the Charles of it all. Did not expect that. That dude tumbled out literally from a helicopter, commits mass murder, goes away in the helicopter with the person whose dupes he murdered. Like, just crazy. Did not expect any of these story beats when I looked at that cover.
If you go to the end of Giant Size Fantastic Four, number four, if you have a physical copy, there is also a reprint of the FF's Rogues Gallery that ran in the early Stanley Jack Kirby books. There's one of the Impossible Man, who we referenced in this episode. There's the Hulk, who is two beings in the same mind, which is the consciousness thing. There's the Red Ghost and the Super Apes. We've got the Mad Thinker, whose friend is a robot. We've got the Super Skrull, the Molecule Man, the Hate Monger, who's the clone of Adolf Hitler in a KKK robe with a flaming torch as his weapon. This is a real character in early Marvel. So there's a little ride into the Fantastic Four's world in 1974. But my favorite Jamie Madrox stories are the ones where he feels like a relatable character. Peter David writes a Jamie, particularly in the 2000s, that almost gives up the main character, Jeff, from Community. He's the likable, good-looking guy who has antics and crazy adventures. And I enjoy a deep Jamie story where people like make it very serious, but I kind of prefer more the everyman with the balance of humor and heart, where he's struggling with responsibility. And Peter David has written, of course, the most of this character's history, so he's the one that's kind of gotten it right. I love Jason Lowe writing Jamie Madrox too, which is great. I had a delightful time. I have never been a bigger Jamie Madrox fan than this exact moment after talking to you guys and doing the research for this show. I look forward to this trial in the new year. As we're wrapping up, I'd love for you to share any final thoughts or questions. We're going to put this out in early December, which is crazy, but where can people find you online, and is there anything you would like to plug?
You can find my podcast, X Factor Files Podcast, on Instagram and all of your wonderful podcast clients out there. We are wrapping up our coverage, actually, of X Factor Investigations. I think by the time this airs, we maybe have one or two episodes left to cover that entire run, and then we'll proceed with other things. But of course, we're covering Alpha Flight, Marvel Star Trek stuff as well, and Defenders.
You can find me in social media, Mr. Scott Free. I'm trying to think, this will come out in December. I was probably there as Jamie Madrox.
You can find me on Instagram, Jason Lowe Makes Comics. I hope you pick up Dazzler issue number 3. It's Dazzler with her duet with Layla Chinney. I mean, we got an ex-villain that's in that issue as well. Also, Werewolf by Night issue number 4. And if you happen to be in Delhi, India, come see me and Ryan North for Comic-Con Delhi.
I had a delightful time with all of you today. Thank you so much for your time. So thank you everybody for the ongoing support. Thank you, Jason, Scott, and Daryl for all of your time today and your talents. We will see you all back here next week on the Gray Malkin Lane podcast. Thank you for listening to Gray Malkin Lane. We hope you are enjoying this podcast. Gray Malkin Lane is produced and recorded in Salt Lake City, Utah, with music and editing done by my husband, Michael Bell, and promo art done by the incredible Seth Martell. Look for us on Patreon, where we are releasing weekly episodes about obscure characters and facts. It's a great way to participate with the podcast for only just a couple of dollars a month, and it helps support what we are doing here. Also, the best way you could help Gray Malkin Lane is by sharing and liking and subscribing, but also please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll see you back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane.